Thanks for joining us for another episode of Fraud Talk. I'm Emily Primo, assistant editor of Fraud Magazine, and I'm joined by Tyson Johnson, vice president of business development at Bright Planet. Today, I will be speaking with Tyson about using open source intelligence to stop online fraud and counterfeiting. Can you give us a brief background on Bright Planet?
Sure. So Bright Planet's been around for about 13 years. And they've originally started as a library science company many, many, many years ago, where the goal was to learn how to harvest and then structure unstructured content from open sources. The company is located in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and it really is known for its ability to harvest open source information at massive scale on the deep web. And as a matter of fact, Bright Planet actually coined the term the deep web back in 2001. And since that time, we've done a lot of work in the online fraud and online law enforcement support space for intelligence and law enforcement groups across North America.
So when you talk about open source intelligence and the deep web specifically, what exactly do you mean?
Open source intelligence, or OSINT, and back from my intelligence days, is anything that's open source is available on the internet that's publicly available, that anyone can access. Think of discussion boards, your forums, databases that would be behind initial surface web pages, dynamic databases that you'd have to query into, public accounts on social media tools like Twitter and Facebook. So open source intelligence essentially means that you're harvesting publicly available information at massive scale and then preparing that and structuring it. And the deep web, if you think of surface web, everyone's very familiar with Google, Yahoo, and Bing. And if you do a straw poll of most people, those are the tools that they use. Those are the search engines that they use to search the internet. And those tools do a great job at finding information through the surface web. That is, what their crawlers can find and index back to you. The deep web is infinitely larger, and what that entails is the ability to go to websites. Think of WebMD or yellowpages.com, where you really can't find any information unless you go to that website and you punch in information specific to your query and hit enter. And then the results go into, you know, that query goes into a dynamic database of content and pulls back the relevant results to you. That's mm-hmm. deep web. So when we talk about deep web, we talk about the size and scale of all the information behind those types of dynamic databases.
When I knew that we'd be talking a little bit about the deep web, I explored it myself, and I started at Hidden Wiki and realized that they databased by category. I mean, it's just so easy. All of the resources needed to commit financial and other types of fraud. I mean, it's just right there, easy to find, filter through, get what you want. I mean, how do you possibly combat that?
And you know, it's fascinating. Years ago, the equivalent would have been books that were published in the black market, like physical books published on, you know, how to commit fraud and how to commit certain crimes or how to commit certain terrorist acts. Now it's all available online and searchable. And so it's infinitely easier to obtain. It's probably been translated into 40 languages, and now fraudsters across any continent in the universe can figure out how to do fraud. And how do you combat it? This is where I think it's important for us as CFEs to all take note. And I know it was talked about this year. I mentioned in San Antonio with key speakers and as well during my seminar lecture. We have to get to a place where fraud examiners and organizations are as adept and as comfortable harvesting and using open source information as the bad guys are. Exactly to your point, they have been exploiting open source information and exploiting the fact that they can hide in big data online very easily for years. And it's time for the fraud examining group to step up and to now use the exact same technologies and use the same methodologies, but use it to fight fraud.
Okay. So to kind of expand on that, how can open source and social media harvesting support fraud investigations?
And there are a number of ways. And I think if you look at fraud is fraud. I mean, it's the exact same fraud that's been hitting us for years is now hitting us. It's just using a different medium. And a lot of it now is going online. So I can tell you that we've had a lot of success working with companies that are utilizing big data, open source intelligence for fighting fraud. In the insurance space, we're working with insurance firms or insurance providers, I should say, who are, through using open source information on suspect claimants, red flag claimants, are able to reduce the cost of investigations on a per claim basis by using open source tools to investigate claimant activities rather than using manual surveillance or the old physical surveillance, which was much less effective than being able to monitor people online if they have active profiles. The ability to then, you know, triage a think of a fraud through the insurance channels, being able to triage your physical surveillance. So if you know through monitoring open sources and social media that this claimant is participating in activities that are counterclaim on Wednesday nights and Saturday mornings, you as the insurance company, you as the company that has to pay for the adjudication of that claim, you can now be very precise and very tight with your budgets when you give a physical surveillance file out, and you can say, I want that surveillance done Wednesday nights and Saturday mornings to match the time of the activity that you've identified as a trend on social media and open sources. You can do this as well now over time to look at timelines of people's activities. So if individuals are operating in an organized organized manner, you can identify the networks that they're connected with, and that may be helpful if it's a staged accident or a part of an organized fraud activity, where you can identify connections and networks that you might not have seen before. It's also very useful for verifying employment. So again, if someone's on claim or workers' compensation or other types of claim activity, we've had a lot of success with the use of our open source tools to identify the lifestyle patterns and the activities of individuals, and if they're showing that they're actually appear to be working or gaining an income elsewhere, then that may be counterclaim to what they're telling the companies or the governments that they're working with. And the last thing I would say that we've had a real success with is witness identification. The ability to, if there's been a loss event or an accident or any type of, even if it's a, not necessarily a personal accident, but an accident that's happened at a work site or a flood in a building, whatever it might be, with the prevalence of people online today and social media, we're working with groups, so we had a great conversation with groups in the subrogation space on identifying historical timelines of activities through social media replay, where we can identify, you know, who said what when about a particular event, and we can identify witnesses who can then be interviewed and talked to determine what they saw and when they saw it, whereas before you would never have known who were witnesses to those particular events.
Do you think that there ever comes a point where companies might feel, or people might feel, that the storing or sorting or filtering of open source data comes close to crossing the line into privacy concerns?
We've actually had, and again, I think it's attributable to the group that is, the certified fraud examiner community are very concerned about privacy issues and making sure that we're doing things on the right side of the ethics and moral and legal side of the law. But I think what we have to be cognizant of, and we've had great conversations and presentations with law firms who work in this space, and there's been a lot of court precedent on the use of open source information in cases in terms of entering this evidence into court. If it's public facing and open, There is no expectation of privacy on that information. I know since Snowden came out, a couple of years ago now, and the ongoing rhetoric that you hear around that. But we have to be very clear here. We're talking about public-facing, open-source information that anyone could get in a manual fashion, and just doing this at massive scale through an automated fashion to find trends and connections that you wouldn't be able to find effectively or efficiently in a manual manner. So I don't think the privacy concerns are, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but I don't think that they are anything that's going to stop the use of this technology. As a matter of fact, I can tell you that we're working very closely with ISB Canada, one of our partners in the insurance space, and what we've actually found is that it actually is a benefit to use our services versus some of the potential services of others, where we will guarantee through our technology that we will only harvest public-facing open-source information, and you don't run the risk of having companies out there that will use fake accounts or surreptitious accounts to friend somebody on social media to get information that then can't be used in court. So if it's not public-facing, our technology won't harvest it, and therefore you have a very strong case to know that everything that's been harvested and collected can be accessed and used as evidence in a court of law.
You mentioned ISBC. Can you tell us how you're using open-source harvesting to help support them in a fraud investigation, or what exactly you're doing with them?
Absolutely. Very excited about what we're doing with ISB Canada. They are a third-party data provider to the insurance firms here in Canada. And what they've done is manually they will access databases, third-party databases, obtain the information, and then provide that back to the claims adjusters. And what we've developed with them, what we're working on, is really two or three different types of services to the community. And one is the ability to automate the harvesting of that third-party data that is required by the claims adjuster to get information to identify whether there are red flags of fraud in terms of the claim that was being filed. What we're also developing now, the full life cycle of the insurance histories, where you'll start with the underwriting and the policy writing side of the insurance business, where they would like to make sure that whoever is applying online for this policy is who they say they are and does not have any red flag information sitting on open sources that may change the decision of the insurance company as to whether to underwrite a policy for this individual or not. So the fraud on the front end of, are you who you say you are, and are you legitimately providing us with credible information about your claims history and your background and your employment, etc. That's where it starts. And then if you move to a loss event, the same technology then would kick in to say, are there any red flags between all the information that we're able to harvest from third parties, whether that's claims history information or it's social media account information, whatever it might be, are there red flags in that data set that we can trigger back to the insurance firm to say, this is a red flag claim and should have further notice taken to it, further investigation done, or are there no red flags, and therefore it speeds up the claims process. So it works to the benefit ultimately of the insurance companies, but also to the legitimate individual who's filing claim, so that there should be a quicker turnaround on a claims investigation. That if there are no red flags and there's been a much deeper dive of information done, provided back to the insurance company, and there's been no red flags, then that claim should be paid quicker. Whereas on the flip side, it's protecting the policyholders writ large, because we end up ultimately paying for the fraud of others. So if we can identify red flags quicker and through a more thorough review of the data set that we're harvesting, then it allows the insurance companies to combat that fraudulent claim quicker, stop the losses quicker, and ultimately reduce the fraud losses for that insurance company, which reduces our overall policy costs. The other two products that we've developed with them is a social media search and a social media surveillance technology where we will identify online profiles of red flag claimants and then be able to monitor those claimants automated in real time and create a 30-day surveillance harvest of their social media activities and be able to provide that back to the insurance firm to see whether or not there's any red flags inside that 30-day window of activity, so that they know either to continue to look into the case or send it to their SIU or to pay out the claim, et cetera.
So what does a red flag look like when you do this, when you're looking at their social media or something? I mean, in my mind, I picture, someone who's gone on disability and then you see on their social media that they've been lifting boxes or moving or something like that. Is it like that, or what do those red flags look like?
It's a great question, and ultimately the red flags change depending on the type of claim that it might be. So we've had claims that are, you know, your soft tissue claims. So just like you said, someone's been in a car accident, has suffered personal injury, and they, in their statement of claim, you know, are indicating that, you know, they can't be on their feet for more than an hour at a time, or they can't work their 9-to-5 job, they can't return to work because of you know, mental and physical fatigue that hit them due to the injuries. And what you're looking for here now would be counterclaim activity. So red flags would be mentions of events like, you know, are they playing sports? Were they jet skiing? Were they water skiing? Were they out with friends all night? So is their activity counterclaim? And so what we're able to do with our technology is look for keywords or key phrases or key types of activities that we can tag and harvest through the information. So when we pull someone's Twitter feeds and we're looking for words like, you know, perhaps it's travel. Maybe you know, they're heading off to Cuba for a week of vacation or down to Bahamas. That might be counterclaim if they're a particularly bedridden individual who's not able to you know, work their 9-to-5 job, or mentions of, you know, off to work or off to the gym or any type of activity that might be counterclaim, we can monitor that for and provide that back to the insurance adjuster to make sure that they're identifying whether or not the activities of the individual match their statement of claim.
Do you have any advice for companies that are just beginning to use open source intelligence?
Yes, I think one of the big misconceptions, and again, if we take a step back and we think about how we search for information, you have to have some starting point. You have to have some understanding of where you need to look for information. There is no, you know, searching Google. I think people have, over the years, have created this misperception that you simply enter in "find fraud" in the Google search bar and hit enter and it'll bring it all back to you. We need to know where to look as a starting point. So to give an example, so if you're first time out there working with open source intelligence, and let's say you are you're the brand protection lead at a massive retailer or a company that sells a certain brand of product, you need to know, you know, are we looking at business-to-business boards? Is it a Kijiji? Is it a Alibaba where people are fencing your stolen or your diverted product or your counterfeit product? Are there known websites? Maybe it's only a handful of sites that you're aware of. But there has to be a starting point from which you can then build out your source lists. So you have to spend time before you start searching online, if you will. You have to spend time building a bit of a roadmap as to what you know to date is being sold or fenced or committed online. What forums or sites or locations online might that be most relevant or prevalent at, and then that's your starting point. So before you start running off and doing searches online, you need to take a step back and sit down with a piece of paper or a Word document and think through, what do you know today? Because most of us out there, most CFEs out there, are going to have a case, you know, they're going to have a case history of, you know, how they've been hit, who's been hitting them, what websites or forums or blog sites have they heard about or seen that they wish they could monitor or do more about? Is it Twitter? Is it other social media? Where are people talking or doing the committing the frauds? And if we can start with that, then you can go in and you can take a technology like ours and say, okay, we want to start by harvesting these social media sites, these websites, these B2B boards, and we want to look for the following brand names, and whether there's a price associated with it, an email address associated with it, and some form of payment processing or way to pay. Those would be the indicators that we'd be looking for. Can we please now harvest those sites on an ongoing basis and identify how many of our product by name is being sold, how many are attributed to a payment processing capability, how many are attributed to email addresses and phone numbers, and are any of these groups connected to each other? And that would become infinitely more valuable to that group looking to do online fraud management than it would be to simply run forward and start searching online. So take some time and map out what you know to date. It doesn't have to be a whole lot, but we have to know where to start, and then you can become much more efficient at your online fraud activities.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us and talking about all of that. That wraps up another episode of Fraud Talk. You can find more episodes at acfe.com/podcast. We hope you tune in next month for another exciting episode.